Welcome to Monday Morning Murder in the News with Alyssa Carroll.
Except it's Friday Morning Murder in the News. And here, we continue our murder in the news, which is still better than the regular trash news we are fed. So buckle in, trash pandas, let's get into it. And remember, I don't read these articles past the title, so we are reacting together. Let's get to it. Our first article comes from FoxNews.com. Title reads, Remains of Colorado Missing Mom Suzanne Morphew Found 3 years After Disappearance. So, the remains of Suzanne Morphew have been found and positively identified as the Colorado missing mom last seen over 3 years ago, according to the Colorado Bureau of Investigation. Morphew, 49, vanished during a bike ride on Mother's Day in 2020. The CBI on Wednesday said that Morphew's remains were found in Saginaw County, located in the southwestern part of the state. Quote, While this case has garnered attention from around the world, it has touched our community and the sheriff's office deeply, said Chaffee County Sheriff John Spez. Quote, We have never stopped our investigation and will continue to follow all leads in pursuit of justice for Suzanne. Officials said no press conference is currently planned. Quote, Although locating Suzanne's remains is a critical component in this investigation and for her family, we are left with many more questions than answers, and it would be a disservice to conduct a news conference at this time. So no arrests have been made. Prosecutors initially alleged that her husband Barry murdered his wife after she made a decision to leave him, but later asked a judge to drop and dismiss the murder charges in April of 2022. Text messages from Suzanne released in June suggests she was having affairs while still together with Barry. In a March 2020 text message to a guy named Jeff, described by the Denver Gazette as a high school flame, Suzanne wrote, quote, Nobody loves you like the way I do. I crave time with you. I crave the feeling I get when we connect, physically or emotionally. You're my guy, always, end quote. Iris Barry's attorney said at the time her client did not know about Suzanne's 2-year affair with Jeff, who she claims hasn't been fully investigated by law enforcement. The texts also revealed Suzanne believed her husband was having an affair in an April 24th, 2020 text to Barry. Quote, Oh, I'm sure your mistress has you all happy now so you can say you love me, but bully me when you're with me. Yeah, that's love, she said to Barry over a text. In March of 2020, Suzanne texted Barry saying they needed to, quote, figure this out civilly. Barry filed a lawsuit against prosecutors on May 2nd of this year, with his lawyers arguing that he, quote, suffered the indignity of being wrongfully arrested, jailed, and prosecuted for a crime he did not commit, end quote. And yeah, I can imagine that would be absolutely terrifying. So the 11th Judicial District Attorney Linda Stanley told Fox 31 Denver in a statement, the, quote, potential filing of a complaint against an attorney is not equivalent to the attorney engaging in any misconduct, and anyone can file a complaint against a lawyer with the Office of Attorney Regulation Counsel, end quote. So I'm sorry that she has lost her life, obviously. We don't know if she was murdered. We don't know if, I mean, they found her body, so we don't know if she was murdered. We don't know if she was, if she died, something happened, animal, you know, who knows. But regardless, it sounds like some drama. So this next article kind of hits close to home for me because this happened in the closest big city to me, in Missouri. So this comes from KTLA.com. Title reads, Gypsy Blanchard to be released from prison on parole in December, coming out of Springfield, Missouri. Gypsy Blanchard has been granted parole and is scheduled to be released in December, the Missouri Department of Corrections confirmed. Blanchard now 32, wow, pleaded guilty to murder in 2016 for her role in the killing of her mother, Claudine, or Dee Dee, Blanchard. Gypsy was sentenced to 10 years in prison but has been granted early release. The Greene County case attracted a national spotlight and inspired documentaries and an 8-episode miniseries on Hulu. Gypsy's attorneys say her mother abused her and held her prisoner for years as part of an elaborate fraud scheme. They say the abuse included Blanchard's mother isolating her, forcing her to use a wheelchair, and subjecting her to unnecessary medical procedures. The Louisiana native advanced the lies by claiming they were Hurricane Katrina survivors and Gypsy's medical records had been destroyed in the storm. In June 2015, Gypsy arranged for her online boyfriend, Nicholas, to travel to the family's home in Springfield to kill her mother. After the murder, Gypsy and the boyfriend fled back to his home in Wisconsin, where they were arrested just days later. For his role, the boyfriend was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison, but Greene County prosecutor Dan Patterson struck a deal with Gypsy, taking into account the abuse that she suffered. And side note, the abuse that she suffered, horrific. Horrific. Gypsy pleaded guilty to second-degree murder and was sentenced to the minimum of 10 years in prison. She will soon be released after serving 85% of her sentence as required by state law. She was given credit for the time she spent in the Greene County Jail before pleading guilty. Gypsy's expected release date is December 28th. So, I'm sure most of you are pretty familiar with that case, but if you're not, the mother... It's sort of like a Munchausen syndrome. They did come up from Louisiana. I can't remember if they're really Hurricane Katrina survivors. But they won like a Habitat for Humanity house, I believe. And were given like a free house. And yeah, Gypsy was forced to be in a wheelchair. And she had surgeries that she didn't need. And was on all kinds of medications that she didn't need. And, her mother would shave her head and shave her eyebrows and say that she had cancer. Like, it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. And no, it's not an excuse to kill your mother, but I'm just saying, it's a reason. So our next article comes from The Guardian, amp.theguardian.com. And the title reads, a 23-year-old was arrested for gun possession. It led the FBI to a global satanic cult. Angel Almeida's alarming social media posts led authorities to 764, a group that abuses minors and circulates violent videos. So an arrest on gun possession charges in Queens, New York in November 2021 has led the Federal Bureau of Investigation to a pedophilic, satanic extortion cult that has victimized dozens, if not hundreds, of minors, according to law enforcement documents, court records, and sources with knowledge of the investigation. Law enforcement discovered the organization, known as 764, and a range of aliases while investigating alarming social media posts made by Angel Almeida, a 23-year-old resident of Astoria, Queens. On September 12, 2023, the FBI issued a public warning about 764, noting the group is, quote, deliberately targeting minor victims on publicly available messaging platforms to extort them into recording or live streaming acts of self-harm and producing child sexual abuse material, end quote. The advisory is the first formal mention of 764 by any American law enforcement agency. The group appears to target children between the ages of 8 and 17, the advisory notes, and particularly focuses on young people of color, youth identifying as LGBTQ+, or youth who struggle with mental health issues. Researchers familiar with 764 indicate the group's members cultivate ties with minors through a wide range of platforms, either in wildly popular games like Roblox or gaming communications platforms like Discord and Twitch, as well as curated playlists on the streaming service SoundCloud. The group's main form of communication is on Telegram, which has long been the platform of choice for many far-right extremists. Members, quote, use threats, blackmail, and manipulation to get youth to record videos showing acts of self-harm, animal cruelty, sexual acts, and even suicide. Oh my God. The authorities warn. The footage is then circulated among members to extort victims further and exert control over them. In the group's channels, members share violent gore videos depicting torture, lethal violence, and other such acts in an effort to desensitize viewers to acts of ultra-violence. That's fucked up. The key motivators for the group, according to authorities, is, quote, to gain notoriety and rise in status within their group, end quote. Documents and sources familiar with 764 indicate the group is an offshoot of the Order of Nine Angels, O9A, a violent, subversive amalgam of esoteric Hitler worship, Satanism, and Wiccan tenets that American authorities recognize as a terrorist ideology and that has been connected with murders and attempted terrorist attacks in countries including the U.S., Britain, Germany, Canada, and Russia. Sources with knowledge of investigations into 764 indicate the group has a network of a couple thousand participants and hundreds of highly active members who generate and disseminate the bulk of the child pornography and gore videos found in the group's channels on Telegram, Discord, and more obscure platforms like Matrix. You know, kind of side note again, this brings me back to the Libby and Abby in Delphi, right? Because those people are Odinists and they sacrifice two girls. Like, what is going on? So, like many online-based extremist organizations, 764 involves people around the world, including people in the UK and Germany. A German teenager who is accused of murdering his foster family in Romania is suspected of participating in 764, according to reporting from Der Spiegel and Romanian outlet Libertate. The FBI was directed to Almeida by an anonymous tipster, thank you, anonymous tipster, flagging his social media accounts which contained images of violence against children and violence against animals. And yet Zuckerberg, or we say we got zooked, you know, they're shutting down like the dark memes. This is going on? Really? One of the posts, Almeida expressed support for Dylan Roof, the white supremacist who massacred African-American churchgoers in Charleston of 2015. Disgusting. Another showed him toting a shotgun while shirtless and wearing a skull mask and crossed bandoliers to rifle ammunition across his chest with a flag in the background featuring the Order of Nine Angels symbol. While searching Almeida's apartment in New York, investigators recovered a 9mm handgun, bandoliers of rifle ammunition, books pertaining to the Order of Nine Angels, and a flag bearing the insignia of an American O9A offshoot, the Temple of, spelled O-V, Blood, according to a November 2021 detention memorandum filed by federal prosecutors. Oh my God. So the most telling item was an OA9 Blood Covenant featuring a blood-smeared drawing of a hooded figure with glowing red eyes surrounded with sigils for four O9 deities and the caption, Vindex, Nithra, Satan, and Abatu. At the bottom of the page is an oath, quote, a covenant signed in blood. May the devil walk with you always, Satane Manibus. Or by Satan's hand in Latin. I don't even like saying that out loud. I'm not even Christian. I don't like saying that. Similar things have been found in possession of OA9-influenced killers in Britain and Canada. Almeida, who had served an 18-month sentence in Florida for third-degree burglary in 2018, was arrested for being a felon in possession of a firearm and detained in Brooklyn's Metropolitan Detention Center. In February 2023, federal prosecutors in the Eastern District of New York filed a superseding indictment, tacking on child pornography and child exploitation charges related to his activities in 764 and the hundreds of thousands of digital files recovered from four separate devices in his apartment. In the new charges, prosecutors allege Almeida coerced a teenage girl into having sexual relations with an older man and convinced another girl to cut herself, record the act on camera, and send it to him. That is foul. That's foul. Almeida was deemed fit for trial earlier this month despite repeated violent behavior in the courtroom, including attempts to attack a Justice Department staffer in the audience and his own court-appointed counsel on separate occasions in June and September. His court-appointed counsel, the fourth attorney who has represented Almeida since his arrest in 2021, did not respond to requests for comment about the allegations against his client. The trial is currently scheduled for 4th of December. If convicted, Almeida faces a potential maximum of life in federal prison. He should absolutely get life in prison. What, was there even a question? Our next article comes from CBSNews.com. The title reads, Zoologist Adam Brighton, accused of torturing animals, pleads guilty to bestiality and child abuse charges. Here we go. So, an acclaimed British crocodile expert has pleaded guilty to charges relating to bestiality and accessing child abuse material, the BBC has reported. Australia's Northern Territory Supreme Court heard allegations from prosecutors describing how Adam Brighton, a 51-year-old zoologist, filmed himself torturing dozens of dogs before sharing videos of the incidents online under pseudonyms. They said he abused the animals in a shipping container on his property, which he called a torture room. I hear Australia and I just know that our beloved rest in peace Steve Irwin is just rolling in his grave. Prosecutors told the court Brighton had a sadistic sexual interest in animals dating back to at least 2014, and that in the 18 months leading up to his arrest, he had abused 42 dogs, most of which had died. According to prosecutors, Brighton would use an online marketplace platform to find people who needed to give their pets away because of work or travel commitments, and he would offer to take the animals he would later abuse. I'm hitting read more and it won't open the rest of the article. I don't even know if I want to hear anymore. It's going to turn my stomach. Gross. Our next article comes from FingerLakes1.com. Title reads, Woolcott pair accused abuse. Five-year-old hospitalized at ICU was badly malnourished. And side note, this is like how many times I've heard this story about kids being starved. You know, we've got the mom in Utah or whatever with her Jody Hildebrandt piece of shit culty lady. I just don't understand it. Anyway, okay, sorry. Authorities in Wayne County say two Woolcott residents were arrested after a child abuse investigation. On September 28th, around 2:22 p.m., Vanessa Torellis, 37, and Nicole Torellis, 36, both of Woolcott, were arrested for a felony count of endangering the welfare of an incompetent or disabled person. It's alleged that in January, a five-year-old boy was brought to the hospital by Vanessa, and the child was significantly malnourished and ultimately had to be admitted to the ICU there. Investigators determined that both Vanessa and Nicole were responsible for the child's care and failed to provide it. The two were released with appearance tickets and will answer to charges in Woolcott Town Court. That's the end of that article. You know, this is kind of, I don't know if I should even admit this to you guys, but this there is a side to me when it comes to people that do fucked up shit to kids, where perhaps you should be put in a cell and starved. Maybe you should know how painful it is, how horrible it is to have to go without eating and get malnourished, you know? I think that's one of those eye for an eye things that many of us would just look the other way. I'm just saying. I know that's bad, but I'm just saying. Our next article comes from WPDE.com, ABC 15 News. And the title reads, Flight Attendant Found Dead with Sock in Mouth, Identified as 66-Year-Old Woman. Fantastic. So this is coming out of Philadelphia. A flight attendant who was found dead with a sock in her mouth in a Pennsylvania hotel room has been identified. A cleaning crew at the Marriott Hotel at the Philadelphia International Airport found her body Monday night. Action News noted investigators said she was supposed to check out of the hotel 2 days prior. People reported she worked for American Airlines and also noted her death is being investigated as suspicious. With a sock in her mouth, you fucking think? A little suspicious? Who stuffs a sock in their mouth to kill themselves? Quote, we are devastated by this news, the statement noted. Our thoughts are with the family and colleagues, and we're doing everything we can to ensure all affected have the support they need during this difficult time. We will continue to cooperate fully with law enforcement in their investigation. NBC 10 Philadelphia said police told the media outlet Ramos likely suffered a, quote, sudden death. A report also noted there were no signs of forced entry into the hotel room and she was, quote, on several medications. I do not retract my statement. Our next article comes from CBSNews.com and the title reads, Charging Documents, Jason Billingsley Raped, Set Two on Fire Before Murder of Baltimore Tech CEO. But see, now Baltimore is in the news, or at least the news that is sent to me and I find fairly often. What the hell's going on in Baltimore? An arrest warrant was issued on September 20th for a rape and arson investigation in West Baltimore, 5 days before 26-year-old tech CEO Pava LaPere was found dead in her Mount Vernon apartment. Jason Billingsley, a 32-year-old Baltimore man, is accused of both crimes. So Billingsley, who is a registered sex offender and a convicted felon, was taken into custody late Wednesday at a train station in Bowie. Police said detectives were searching for Billingsley after he allegedly set a fire on September 19th in the 800 block of Edmondson Avenue. It was initially reported as an arson, but Baltimore Police Acting Commissioner Richard Worley confirmed Thursday that a rape investigation was underway in the incident. A man and a woman were burned and left critically injured. A 5-year-old was found unharmed in a separate room in the 3-story row home. Documents reveal that woman told police that a man who identified himself as maintenance kicked in the front door and pointed a gun at her head, duct taped her, and handcuffed another person in the home. Documents say that the suspect raped her multiple times, cut her neck, and then poured an unknown liquid on them and set them on fire. Jesus! A neighbor who asked not to be identified, well, no shit, told WJZ that she woke up to the sound of a smoke detector and unforgettable screaming. Quote, I heard her screaming and banging on the grate, help her get out, help her, the neighbor said. I screamed through the building to see if there was anyone who could help me help her. That's when she said she realized her building was on fire and the neighbor who resided in the basement was trapped. Quote, people from across the street came over and got her grate off and got her out and pulled the guy who was with her out, the neighbor said. By the time firefighters arrived to extinguish the flames, the man and woman had been pulled to safety from the basement window. But neighbor said something didn't seem right. He had handcuffs, quote, he had handcuffs, and his leg was bleeding and his feet were taped, a neighbor said. Worley said the attack was targeted and that Billingsley had access to the home on Edmondson Avenue because he worked there. Quote, we know that the victim and suspect were known to each other, Worley said. We know that the suspect did not break into the building as he worked at the location. We have evidence to believe the victims of Edmondson Avenue were targeted by the suspect, that the suspect knew the victims, and he went into that location for a criminal reason, end quote. I mean, what was your first clue, dude? What was your first clue? Security cameras captured the suspect inside the home wearing a face mask, pointing a gun, and grabbing the woman. Billingsley, who was the location's maintenance worker, was identified after he was found in the area fixing things, doing yard work, and walking inside the home. Worley said they didn't immediately release information about the rape and arson investigation because it wasn't deemed as a, quote, random attack. Quote, he had access to the home. He was allowed in the apartment. So there was no reason to believe that he was out committing random acts. Had we believed that the flyer would have gone out to everyone on September 20th, as soon as we got the warrant, end quote. Days later, police said Billingsley was named as a suspect in LaPere's murder. LaPere, who co-founded EcoMap Technologies, a company that says it digitizes ecosystems with its proprietary technology, was believed to have been killed on September 22nd. She was reported missing on September 25th, the same day her body was found at the Baltimore apartment. Baltimore police were working with federal and local authorities to find Billingsley before LaPere was killed, Worley said. Shortly before police publicly identified Billingsley as the suspect in LaPere's death on Tuesday, authorities were, quote, within 88 meters of catching the suspect, Worley said, but he eluded their capture. 88 meters. Quote, we never got close enough. 88 meters is the closest I believe we got, which is about 300 feet, which is about the size of a football field, and that's why we had the delay for the press conference, because we knew where he was at, and we were looking for him, end quote. Worley said that during the press conference, the devices police were tracking became disconnected and the suspect was using other ways to communicate. Worley refused to speculate that if police had notified the public sooner after the arson, LaPere's murder may have been avoided. Quote, I'm not going to speculate if it could have prevented her death. As soon as we realized that there was a public safety issue, we had the press conference. Worley also said the victims in Edmondson Avenue were being protected while Billingsley was on the loose. Quote, there were some victims from Edmondson Avenue that were still out. One was at the hospital. One was at their location. We had to get them protection if we're going to put that information out because we didn't know what this guy was going to do, end quote. So, a bit of his criminal history. According to court records, Billingsley, at 18, pleaded guilty to first-degree assault in 2009. He was ultimately given 2 years of supervised probation, but violated the terms and was convicted in a second-degree assault case in 2011, where he served a 2-year prison sentence. After being released, Billingsley was convicted of a rape attempt and mere 3 months later. A judge handed down a 30-year sentence with an expected 2043 release date. However, 16 years of the sentence was suspended and he was given 5 years of supervised probation. Well, there you go. He was paroled in October 2022, according to Baltimore City State's attorney Ivan Bates. Quote, it is very clear that this individual poses a substantial danger, that he had been noncompliant and was clearly violating the terms of his supervision after being released, and that alone should be enough to make sure that we keep him off the streets. Worley said Billingsley had been compliant with his reporting as a registered sex offender until he failed to show up Monday. Wow. Okay, so for our last article, I know. We go to, or it comes from abcnews.go.com, and the title reads, Witness to the 1996 drive-by shooting of Tupac Shakur indicted on murder charge in rapper's death. Oh, I am happy to hear that. A grand jury in Las Vegas has indicted one of the last living witnesses to the 1996 killing of Tupac Shakur in the rapper's death. So one of the last living witnesses to the fatal drive-by shooting of rapper Tupac Shakur in Vegas was charged with murder Friday in the 1996 killing, a long-awaited breakthrough in a case that has frustrated investigators and fascinated the public. Dwayne Keffi D. Davis has long been known to investigators and has himself admitted in interviews and in his 2019 tell-all memoir, Compton Street Legend, that's the name of the memoir, that he was in the Cadillac from which the gunfire erupted during the September 96 drive-by shooting. Shakur was 25 when he was killed. Wow, I thought he was a little older than that. A Nevada grand jury indicted Davis in the killing, prosecutors announced in court Friday. Chief Deputy District Attorney Mark said a grand jury had been seated in the case for several months. He described Davis as an on-ground, on-site commander who ordered the death of Shakur. The charges were revealed hours after Davis, 60, was arrested this morning while on a walk near his home. Las Vegas police raided a home in mid-July in the Las Vegas suburb of Henderson that is tied to Davis. Police were looking for items, quote, concerning the murder of Tupac Shakur, according to the search warrant. They collected multiple computers, a cell phone and hard drive, a Vibe magazine that featured Shakur, several .40-caliber bullets, two, quote, tubs containing photographs, and a copy of Davis's memoir. Clark County District Judge Jerry Weiss denied Davis's bail. Quote, It has often been said that justice delayed is justice denied, District Attorney Steve Wolfson said after the hearing in a brief comment to AP. In this case, justice has been delayed, but justice won't be denied. It wasn't immediately clear if Davis has an attorney who can comment on his behalf. Davis hasn't responded to multiple phone and text messages from the Associated Press seeking comment or an interview in the more than 2 months since the house raid. Shakur was in a BMW driven by Death Row Records founder Marion or Suge Knight in a convoy of about 10 cars. They were waiting at a red light when a white Cadillac pulled up next to them and gunfire erupted. Shakur was shot multiple times and died a week later at the age of 25. And he was a rapper, very well known back in the day. Well, I'm glad that they got whoever ordered the hit, but took an awfully long frickin' time. And I guess that's going to do it for Friday, Morning Murder in the News. Nothing from Florida apparently today, so you're off the hook today. It was Baltimore today I had to pick on. Sorry. Not sorry. So those of us that work all week, we've made it to Friday. I work longer hours during the week so I can have sort of a half day Friday situation, which is nice. And I'm taking the new podcast mascot puppy Monty to the vet for his 4 months and shots and all that kind of stuff. So after work. So we made it to Friday. Thank God. Enjoy your Saturday so that we can go back to dreading Monday all day Sunday. And for those of you that work the weekends, just know, as I always say, that we appreciate you working so that we can get the shit done that we need to get done that we can't get done all week. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So I guess that's it. Behave yourselves. Remember that Auntie Alyssa does not have bail money. Love you guys so much. Talk to you soon.